Hi guys, welcome to the Finding Your Freedom podcast. I hope you guys are all doing well, staying healthy, staying grounded in this very, very challenging and uncertain time. I'm super excited to share today's episode with you guys because I think it will be really helpful right now. Kind of just giving you some time to reflect on what's important and what you want in your life, as well as taking care of your mental health, which is more important than ever right now. So today's guest, actually, I want to make one more announcement first. I'm not sure if any of you guys have listened to last week's episode, but at the very end, I made an announcement about offering free Zoom coaching during this time. So if you're interested, send me an email. My email will be in the show notes for this episode. So yeah, I'd really love to connect and help you with anything you're navigating during this time or changes you want to make moving forward when we're back to normal life. Okay, so for today's guest, is Chelsea Connors. Chelsea Connors is a certified life coach, therapist, and speaker using a holistic approach to mental and emotional well-being. She supports her clients in navigating the anxiety and stress that is often overwhelming in the real world, in quotes, so that they can feel more grounded, intentional, and joyful in their life. Chelsea also has a new online anxiety video series out, so I'm going to put that in the show notes for you guys, but yeah, I don't want to wait any longer. I want us to get straight in the episode. She tells her story for a while, and then we go into some really helpful tips. So I hope you guys enjoy the episode, and yeah, I know you will.
Perfect. So the first question that I want to ask everyone for my podcast, it is, what have you been finding your freedom from lately? And this could be, something physical or a mindset or just anything really.
Yeah. So I love that question. And I think something that I've really been finding freedom from is, for those of you who don't know, my husband's in the military, which means that we move quite often. And he is going to be phasing out of the military in the next few years. So we have a lot of big questions on our mind in terms of where do we want to live long term, and what that might look like. And so right now, finding freedom with not needing to know and really being okay with living in the present moment and trusting that things are going to fall into place. And so that feels incredibly freeing, to not feel so much pressure around needing to have a plan with that. So that has been a huge, huge for me.
Yeah. I love that. And I think it's so freeing when you know that there's a transition, but you just trust in the transition instead of having to have it all figured out. You just know that it'll kind of turn out the way it's supposed to.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So from all of this, I kind of just wanted to start out with kind of like your upbringing and how you decided to kind of get into this work. Like growing up, were there any signs that maybe you would be interested in something like this? Or was this kind of like a pivot or kind of like out of left field?
Yeah. So, you know, I think growing up, depending what year it was, if you asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I would have told you a different answer. I never really had a clear picture of what I wanted to do, but I always knew that in some capacity, I wanted to help people and feel like I was leaving a lasting impact on the world, which I think a lot of us as human beings feel. And so I grew up in New York, about 45 minutes outside of Manhattan. So it was a really busy and fast-paced lifestyle. It was a pretty competitive environment, I would say. And what I saw around me was everybody working almost all the time. Like the whole people existed to live and then on the weekends try and fit in everything else. And so that was really all that I knew growing up. And so in high school, when thinking about college and careers and things like that, I felt really lost because I couldn't necessarily find something that felt like the perfect fit. Though when I think back on it now, when I would take like psychology classes or electives or doing peer mentorship programs in high school and things like that, that I really, really enjoyed, my mom would always hint and say, oh, like, did you like that psychology class? Or it seems like you did really well in that and it was enjoyable for you. And I did, and I would say, yeah, but I just kind of shrugged it off because I wanted, there was like a weird feeling where I wanted something, quote unquote, more exciting or more legitimate. Like I pictured myself stomping the grounds of New York City and having like a big corporate job, but I didn't know what exactly that would look like. And so I think when I was younger, it just was a big question mark in terms of the content of the work that I would be doing. And I had a lot of diverse interests, which made it more confusing for me. But now looking back, it definitely makes a lot more sense. And I've always been somebody that kind of the generic things. My friends would come and try and talk through problems with me. People would definitely describe me as being honest and trustworthy and grounded. And so all of those have been consistent and constant since I can remember. So it makes a lot of sense. But in the moments, I think growing up, I fought against that quite a bit because I didn't necessarily want to be a certified life coach or a therapist, or I didn't think that that would be what my career would play out as. So that was a bit about my upbringing and what that was like for me.
Yeah, I guess from that too, were you like a sensitive kid? Did you think of yourself kind of as a sensitive person then, or?
You know, sometimes I think I had a lot of empathy for other people. I wouldn't describe myself as super sensitive, but I also wasn't insensitive. I feel like I struck that middle chord quite a bit. I think I was pretty realistic and grounded most of the time.
Yeah. It seems like you kind of were like maybe like perfectionistic and kind of like grounded in that way. So like learning maybe for yourself, it was like learning to be compassionate about yourself from your experience helped you learn, like teach that to others.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that word perfectionistic resonates with me a ton. I think through my college years, that was something that I really had to grapple with and work through and come to understand and be okay with, that I am not perfect and nobody else on the planet is perfect. And that is a beautiful strength actually for a lot of us, and really learn to accept that and love parts of myself with the imperfections that exist.
Yeah. So for you, where do you think kind of was the turning point moment? Was it kind of at the end of college, or was it just when you kind of realized that things weren't right in your life? Like, what was that moment like for you?
Yeah. So I think it was probably over the span of honestly a year to a year and a half, towards the end of college and the year after that. So to share a little bit more about what that was like for me, I had gone to college and changed my major, I think, about four times. Finally ended up picking a major, got my degree in it, and had kind of the stereotypical experience of getting an internship, starting to work in that field, and soon recognizing that I really, really did not enjoy it. And at that point, I was one class away from graduating. So I decided to graduate, and I graduated a semester early, and I quickly found myself in therapy for myself personally, because I was freaking out about what the heck was going to happen once I graduated. What did I want to do with my life? Because what I just spent 3.5 years working towards was not at all what I wanted. And so as I was in therapy, I had, and talking about things like that, I had an experience where I lost one of my best and closest friends suddenly in a car accident. And she had been one of the core facets of my life since middle school. So it was really, really close to home. And it shifted my perspectives almost immediately. And it really changed the questions I was asking, from things like, well, what job is going to look good, or how am I going to make enough money, or things like that, to what is the point of me being on this earth here, and what kind of impression do I leave, and what feels meaningful and fulfilling to me. And at the time, I was also about to move with my then boyfriend to California from the East Coast, as he was graduating and going to serve in the Navy. And so there was just so many things that were being thrown at me at once. And it was really, really overwhelming to be asking all of these questions. So I think it took me a good year and a half to really sift through what I wanted my life to look like, and to start to set myself up to lay that out. And so eventually I ended up figuring out my therapist at the time. She was awesome. And I really, really loved the way that she was able to understand people and the complexities of the world and reflect that back to me. And I knew after one specific session that was what I wanted. I wanted to be able to understand people to that level, and to be able to sit with someone and share in their pain and celebrate their wins and help them find the clarity and resources that they might need to feel good throughout their lives and take the steps that are going to help them set up a world that feels aligned and fulfilling, whatever that individual's path might be. So that was quite the process for me. And then I ended up going to grad school and getting all the certifications and all of that. But it was quite the journey to get there.
Yeah. I think it's interesting, because I was just like listening to a podcast today about grief, and it just kind of talking about when you lose someone like that, it shifts the questions you ask yourself, because mm-hmm. you're up against kind of just the impermanence of life. And it's like everything gets really real, and the superficial parts, they just kind of go away, because you realize how precious this life is in that moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I definitely, I feel like before I had that experience, I had watched people that I loved lose people that they loved, but I was still somewhat in the mindset of that wouldn't happen to me, or at least not for a long time. And so when it did, and I felt that loss, yeah, those questions flipped immediately. And it was scary and sad and awful, and also freeing and opening and exciting, and such a powerful learning experience.
Yeah. Do you think, I guess I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this, but as far as like grief goes, do you think being attached to kind of like how it's supposed to be kind of holds you back? Or I think with grief, a lot of people talk about too, that it's kind of just something that, so when you lose someone really close, you kind of live with it, because you think about them often when it comes up with moments that you would kind of like want them in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely am a huge advocate for there is no right way or right process in grief. And I think it looks so, so different for everybody. And I certainly experienced that firsthand, even taking a look at me and my best friends who had been like our core group. We all grieve and still grieve so, so very differently, and experience things at much different paces and very different times and for very different reasons. So yeah, I don't think that there's any right way to do any of it. And I have really grown to just finding the ways that I can still feel connected with her, even if she's not physically here on this earth, and found a lot of solace in that practice. And for, like I said, for some of my best friends, that looks completely different. And it's just as beautiful because it's their way of processing and their way of staying connected.
Yeah, definitely. I think grief is just, it's a hard thing to deal with. It's a hard thing to talk about, and just trying to put it in a box of how it's supposed to be only makes it harder.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But to kind of switch gears a little bit, I honestly just have a curiosity. What was your major that you had in undergrad that you kind of worked in for a little bit before you switched?
Yeah. So my major in undergrad was, I think the title of it was Electronic Media and Film. So essentially I did a lot of sound editing. And the internship that I had, I was working editing commercials for like the Baltimore Orioles and Toyota, and spending a lot of time listening to the same 30-second clip over and over and over again and making sure that all the sound effects matched and things like that. So it was really fun. I loved a lot of the creative aspects of the film industry and sound editing, but there are a lot of aspects that I really did not enjoy as well.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like maybe it wouldn't have been the worst thing, but it doesn't sound like it would have been like super fulfilling and, you know, something to be super passionate about. But I'm sure for someone, it probably is something they're really passionate about. So
yeah, absolutely. To each their own. There are different things for different folks. That is for sure.
Definitely. So as far as, I guess, that transition period, it was, you went to California, I guess, with this boyfriend, then went to grad school, and then was it kind of just gradually came together from that, or how, what did that look like for you?
Yeah, so as I was making this transition, I actually started grad school when I was still on the East Coast, and so my now husband was finishing up his college degree. He was a year behind me in terms of school. And so I stayed in Maryland and I started grad school. I did a year there and then we moved to California together. And I did a year where I was doing my clinical hours and I was working in a college counseling center doing traditional psychotherapy. And finished my graduate degree mostly virtually that second year, which I was so grateful to have the opportunity to do that and to be able to find a clinical internship across the country that would still meet the needs of my program. So that was really such a beautiful experience. And so while I was doing that, I am a big, big advocate for practicing what we preach. And so I really value myself always having the supports that I provide as well. So I tend to work with a therapist or a life coach or a business coach or whatever it might be. And I also am an avid learner, and that's something I really value. So at the time I was looking for a therapist since we had just moved, and I was finding that I was looking for a little bit more action. So I had met with a few different therapists, and I love therapy and I think it's such a beautiful healing form. But at the time I needed just a little bit more than some of the reflection and validation for what I was going through. And so I ended up finding a life coach to work with myself personally, and that opened up the door into coaching. So I finished my graduate degree in clinical mental health counseling while also getting my life coaching certification. And so then I went on to mesh the two. And for a while, I worked kind of half and half in both coaching and then also in traditional therapy until I recently made the transition over the past few years into more of the coaching frame, which has been really, really fun and exciting. And I love getting to work with clients virtually in so many different capacities. That's been really awesome, and connecting with people all over the country.
Yeah, I really love like the versatility of life coaching, and it just seems like with coaching, you know, it's webinars, it's, I don't know, whatever you want your business to be, you can kind of make it into that and offer support on so many different levels, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that aspect of it as well. And I really also still infuse a lot of the tools and techniques that I learned in the more traditional training as well, because I think they really, really correlate quite a bit. So it's a nice blend.
Yeah, definitely. So I was thinking about, I think it was an email you sent out or maybe a post, and kind of talking about in life when you realized you were like checking all the wrong boxes. So if you wanted to kind of expand on that or maybe give some advice to someone who is kind of in that place right now, like where to go when you realize you're checking all the boxes that don't really mean anything.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's that story actually is something that I think so many people experience. And it's not necessarily the fact that I was checking the wrong boxes or all of the wrong boxes. I think it was more a fact of I wasn't checking the boxes that matter to me. And so what that looked like is thinking back to how we talked about in the beginning of our call, growing up on Long Island. And what I grew up with was really seeing all of my family and pretty much everybody that I knew working in a very traditional job. So I was surrounded by a lot of corporate workers or health workers or teachers or police officers. And so a traditional type of job was all that I knew. And so that's what I was trying to fit into. And that's what I was trying to find. And what I found was I would get jobs that I thought I really wanted, even as a therapist or working in fields I was really interested in. And after a few months or a year, I would be like, I don't want to go to work today, or I really don't like this setup, or I don't feel like I'm being treated poorly. And I would question a lot of the things that were happening there. And it also showed up, I think, in some of my friendships or relationships and just the way that people that I've experienced in their young adulthood interact, and thinking about the drinking culture and having questions around that. And is that really how I want to be spending my time and where I want to be connecting with people all of the time? And starting to question that as well. And then in my personal relationship, as we were, I think for our group, we got married and kind of moved forward younger than a lot of our other people. So we were kind of the first people in that boat, which presented its own questions and problems. And so for us, that was a really big sign that we needed to look at our boxes and think about what is most important to us. What do we really value here? And what do we want our future to look like? And so I think if I could share any insight with listeners or people tuning in and they're feeling like something's not clicking, or maybe they are trying to check the wrong boxes, it would be to start to look inward and to start to think about those things. So what do I want my life to look like in the future, and how do I want to be feeling, and what really matters to me, and what do I value? And start to use that as the frame for how you make decisions, how you pursue things, how you connect with people, rather than just doing what other people do because it's what you know or what you see.
Yeah. And I think that's so important, is the self-reflection piece. And I think it takes a while of reflecting kind of in the in-between of being unhappy before you're even ready to get action. And I think it's really important for people to know, like, feeling like nothing's right and not knowing anything, that means you know something, because you know nothing's working right now. I think that's important.
That is hugely important. Yeah, definitely. I think we can't do anything if we're not aware of it. So that awareness piece pretty much has to come first. So it is tremendously valuable. And even if you don't know the how or the what that comes next, knowing that something's not working or something's not clicking absolutely is super valuable information.
Yeah, I think too, I heard this quote, and it was something along the lines of like being well in like a profoundly like sick society is like no indication of health, I think is some term, like something like that. And for me, it was just like, oh, so we just go to work at this job we hate for 40 hours a week, and we just get drunk all the time, and we watch like football, and like that's life, I guess. Like that's just what people do. And it's, I think too, it's important when you're in that lost time to kind of to see people that like expand your view and to see people that do it differently too. I think that is really important because like you said, it's like when that is all you have seen and all you know, you're kind of left with, well, is this just life? Like,
yeah.
And it doesn't have to be. And I think it's really important to be around people that also live like in an aligned, like happy life and see that that's like possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think for me, like, I'm not here to harp on traditional jobs or 9-to-5s or anything like that, because I know plenty of people who have that type of work lifestyle and truly, truly love it. My husband is like, if I have a job, a 9-to-5 job, and I'm able to come home and feel good about the work that I've done, leave work at work, have my weekends off, that would be a good life. And so we are very, very different in that way, because that kind of lifestyle didn't necessarily click for me. But I think there's so much beauty that can come from honoring those differences. And I think regardless of what you choose and what you pursue, doing it from a place of intention and what feels good, regardless of what it looks like, is what actually matters. Because if you can do that and you feel good about that type of work, have at it by all means. Please go for it and love it and live your life. And I don't think work necessarily has to be everybody's passion or anything like that. And so it's a weird complex, but I think having time and space to ask yourself questions rather than feeling cornered into something makes a world of difference.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm definitely not like harping on 9-to-5 either. Like I think that would be the type of schedule or life that I would like, and to not work from home. So I think it is really important to do what feels good and what feels right for you, and to not, I guess, not shy away from those bigger questions. And I don't know, I think like kind of societally speaking, like I think we're just at a time where like it is really important to know what you want to do and give back in your work in some sort of way if you're kind of seeing, you know, the problems and the changes and everything that's happening in the world in so many different areas.
Yeah, absolutely. Could not agree more.
So I think from that, I think we've just talked about how with graduating college, there's a lot of skills related to adulting and a lot of big questions. And I guess I kind of wanted to hear your thoughts, because I definitely have. After I graduated college, it was like this, just this door opened, and it was like a scroll of questions and so many things that I was like, what are relationships? When do you get married? Where do you live? What do I do for work? What do adult friendships look like? And it was just everything. And it was so overwhelming, and none of it was really talked about with the transition. So I'd love to hear kind of your thoughts on going through that in a more graceful way.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm so happy that you brought this up. This is certainly something, honestly, a huge reason of why I do the work that I do, because so often I work with clients who are set up to believe that if they step out of college and have a job lined up, then everything's going to be great and perfect. And that's just not the case. So we see people struggling all the time with areas like relationships, like adult friendships, like finances, learning how to create lifestyle habits and routines that are really supportive and are going to be sustainable. Career is certainly another avenue. How to manage our own physical and emotional well-being, right? So there's so many different facets outside of a job that are going to contribute to our overall well-being. And I would also add in there to that one as well, family dynamics, and especially learning to individuate as an adult, which can be really, really complex in different family systems. And so learning how to navigate that and advocate for yourself in those circumstances, depending on your family unit, can look really, really different. So I think having more conversations about the reality of it and that you're not going to step out of college and everything's going to be all perfect and look great and you're not going to have all the answers of where you want to be or what you want your life to look like, and that's okay. And starting to have some compassion and some patience rather than succumbing to more of the rat race type lifestyle, feeling like I have to do X, Y, or Z, or that means I'm failing or I'm falling behind, which is where I see a lot of my clients kind of get tripped up and really stuck. And that can play out in a lot of different ways in the long term, like staying in relationships that probably aren't a good fit or staying in job roles that are keeping us really small or really limiting, staying living in places that we don't like. And so it can add to so much stress and anxiety because what we know we want in our core and in our soul is so different than what our life actually looks like on the outside.
Yeah, I think the thing that traps a lot of people is the comparison and then like the time crunch mentality. Mm. I know, like for myself personally, it was like I graduated and I was back at home and it was just like, I'm messing up because I'm with my parents. I don't have some job. I don't know what I want to do. And like, I'm running out of time to figure it out. And none of those things were true. And they just made me so anxious that I couldn't even think about what I wanted to do because I felt like there was some imaginary clock of getting to adulthood and I made it on time.
Yeah, absolutely. So much focus on all of the reasons that you're failing or that other people are doing better is an inhibitor to being able to answer your own questions for yourself about what next steps might be or what you really want. And all of those huge questions that come up for a lot of us, even after we graduate. And I will say too, one thing that I see is almost similar to my experience where maybe people graduate and feel as though they have a very direct plan or they know exactly where they're headed. And sometimes that's wonderful and beautiful and that works out. And a lot of times people go into those things and aren't fulfilled or it doesn't work out the way that they hoped it would be. And we're not sharing usually about that on social media until we have a fix for it, until things are better. And so we don't see the struggle piece as much as we see the happy ending.
Yeah. I think that's definitely true. And I think it's interesting that we're just so, or at least it felt like at my college, we're so encouraged to jump head first into the next thing mm-hmm. without taking a second to think about what we want. And even if I feel like for myself, even if the time that I was kind of in this weird transition that was really scary and hard, mm-hmm. it kind of forced me to think about these questions and have the time to figure out what I really wanted. And I'm even if it was a hard time, I'm so grateful for the pause. And I think, I don't know, I think it is very easy in our society to lie to ourselves in a way because we stay so busy or we're, you know, drinking, which there's nothing wrong with drinking, but if you're kind of doing that all the time or drinking, there's not a lot of space between staying busy and always being around people to kind of solve the problem of this subtle not rightness that you're feeling, I guess.
Absolutely. And I think what can make it really complex and really challenging sometimes is depending on the situation, from the outside, it might look like you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing. Or it might look like you're thriving even. And so to then, for some people to then pause and say, hey, no, this actually isn't doing it for me, or this isn't what I want. It can be so jarring and so scary that they don't even go there. And I get it, because those are big questions to be asking. And some people have a lot of support and space for that. And other people are told, suck it up, buttercup, like, just keep going. This is life. And so we're told a lot of messages that can really deter us, I think, from taking that time and that space and slowing down and really being intentional and thinking about these bigger questions and letting that be okay in the in-between as well when we don't know or maybe we don't have that forward momentum quite yet.
Yeah, I think something that came up for me too is, and this might be different since you're married, but I think too, it's you know, it is so much pressure for the job, but at, like, being a single person in your 20s, there's so much pressure for, like, even marriage starting when you graduate. And it's like, we're so young. So is that something that kind of comes up with clients, and how do you kind of navigate that? Because I think dating now is very, I don't know, it's very hard and it's really weird. And I don't know, it's definitely just a strange process. And especially if you're in your 20s and asking these big questions, and a lot of people you feel like aren't asking these questions.
Uh-huh. Yeah, absolutely. Dating is such an important topic in relationships and marriage and all of that, because there is such a pressure to have that lined up as well and to have it figured out. And so I think some of the things that we can do to help with that and to navigate that are what we can do for ourselves personally. So we really can't control other people or how they show up in the dating world or what that looks like. And so if we can instead work on our own self-worth and self-confidence, to really build that up, to know that we don't need another person to complete us in any way and really stand our ground there, oftentimes that will allow us to go out into the world and be more open and have more conversations and maybe meet more people and get explorative about the topic, if that's something that you even want at this point in your life, or if it's not something in your that you want at this point in your life, to be able to be okay with that and comfortable there. But to really, really build up that personal level of confidence and self-worth to know that regardless of what happens in the dating world or what your mom or what your aunt or what the third cousin removed says about your relationship status, that you have everything you need within you to live a happy and fulfilling life, and that things are possible for you way after your 20s, 30s, whenever, whatever that timeline is in your head. And so working really hard on releasing that for yourself internally.
Yeah, I think it's really important to completely let go of the timeline. I think it's really scary because the timeline gives a lot of people a lot of comfort. And I think it's scary, but it's also really freeing to be like, there is no timeline. I'm living today. I'm living tomorrow. And I'm taking steps forward for myself. And just for me and my experience, like, the most amazing, fulfilling things kind of just come up, and they're not really that planned. And of course, when you realize what you want to do, you have to, you know, you have to move forward with them. But I think it's just, it's really beautiful when you just kind of like take a step back on this like life plan you've had and let everything naturally unfold for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what you just described is so, so beautiful. And it is exactly the opposite of what we're taught. And also how our brains like to function. So our brains like to have things that feel stable, dependable, safe. And so sometimes the unknowns can feel incredibly daunting and scary. And also having that reinforced by society and people around us, it can be an effort for sure to rewrite that story and to let go of that timeline. And so kudos to you for thinking about it in that way and really working on that, because I think it does take some intention there, whatever you choose for that to be. And even if it does, like, the timeline is truly what you want and time does matter to you, thinking about, okay, how else could I approach this? Or what is maybe a more helpful frame to be viewing this pursuit from? And taking those questions and making them explorative rather than punitive and a lot of pressure.
Yeah, I think it makes everything better when it's not from this like headspace of pressure or having to figure it out. Like you said, with dating, maybe it's not always the most fun thing, but to just think of it as, you know, as fun, as explorative, and then let's see where this goes, instead of so much like, oh, well, everyone around me has a boyfriend, so I have to, or everyone's getting married, so I have to do this. Like, no, you don't have to do anything. You just are living your life. And I think everyone is so different that it's just, and you also just, you don't know who's happy and who's not happy. So comparing yourself to anyone else's timeline is just a big waste of time.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so true. I've been loving seeing some of the different images and memes floating around that kind of depict things like depression or anxiety and show different faces, because there's no one way that it looks. So we never know what someone's internal experience is like. And yet our brain does a lot of guessing there and a lot of assuming. And so that comparison can be really profound and extremely unhelpful, because we have no clue what the reality of that person's internal world looks like.
Yeah, completely. So I just wanted to shift gears a little bit. Another thing I wanted to ask about that you talk about a lot is like the anti-suck it up like approach to life. And I just love this, because I feel like growing up, I was just kind of surrounded by so many people that were just like, this is just life. You just suck it up. That's just life. And I feel like I heard that so much, that was just life. And it was like when I graduated, I was like, but I don't want this to be the rest of my life. Like, this seems really sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, I have so much that I could talk about on this topic, because it's so, so important to me, and for so many different reasons. And so I have so much compassion and space probably for those people who do say things of like, that's just life, because to some extent, do things always go perfectly and is life always grand and happy and everything's good? Certainly not. Like, nobody lives in that reality. That's not like, that does not exist. So we need to find some space for discomfort, for failures, for things not going as planned, for not everything lighting our world on fire and feeling like the best thing in the whole wide world. Fine. Absolutely. I agree. We need some space for that. I think when I share about my anti-suck it up approach to life, or use that framework to describe some of the work that I do, it's because I feel so strongly that that shouldn't be where you start from or where your core is. And so what I see is we're watching what happens for generations, where maybe from generation to generation, thinking about our parents or our grandparents and some of the ways that's impacted them to just suck things up and to really just feel like, well, I'll just get by, or at least this job is safe, or at least I'm able to do X, Y, or Z. But not feel fulfilled, not feel connected, not be in relationships that feel supportive, and not really build the skills that it takes to stand our ground in a healthy, like, connective type of way, and how that can make us so ill and physically ill, mentally unwell, and just feeling lackluster about life. And when I think about my clients and also my personal life, I just was not okay with accepting that. I just am not. And what I find with my clients is they're not either, but they don't know how to not do that. Or they don't know where they have flexibility or different ways to manage certain emotions or have patience to work out different routes to go. And so I think taking this anti-suck it up approach to life doesn't necessarily mean that everything's going to go perfectly or that you need to have all of the answers. But what it does mean is that you're going to pursue a life that feels really aligned and really good for you.
Yeah, I think that is what is most important, like pursuing a life that is aligned. And like you said, it is not going to be perfect. Life is inherently messy. Perfectionist is not super fun to accept.
Certainly not.
But I think it's just striving for the life you want, not just accepting what you already know you don't like. And I feel like accepting what you don't like, it almost like it affects more than just if it's just a job. It affects kind of your whole life and kind of your own self-worth if you're affecting things that you know don't feel good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's like showing up to a fire every day and continuing to come back and come back and come back and get burned. And over time, that's certainly going to have an effect. And we're certainly going to feel those burns over time, even if they're small in each moment.
Yeah. So kind of related to this, I guess I'm wondering, so if you are growing and kind of the people you're around are not growing, like how to manage that and how to kind of emotionally be prepared to let go when you're kind of growing into a different type of life than the people that are kind of in your circle, and how to navigate that.
Yes, such a good question. So I have something that I share with clients often that I like to call a bullseye analogy for adult friendships and relationships. Because I think a lot of us can get really tied to what a relationship or a friendship once looked like. And what we learn through adulthood is that as we grow and change, we also have to start to accept that some of our friendships and relationships are going to grow and change. And that also means that some of them might dissipate or they might fall away. And so I think if we can come back to this idea that some friendships are, or relationships are only, they serve us and they serve us so, so well for a certain season of life. And then as we grow and change, we may need to learn new things from new people. And that doesn't have to be a tumultuous kind of experience or a really hard breakup from a friend or a partner or whatever that might be, that this can happen with a lot more ease and grace naturally. And so thinking about kind of circling back to that bullseye analogy, if you think about a target, right, we have the bullseye in the middle, and that's often where our closest people are, whether that's family, whether that's a best friend that you've had or that you just made even, or people that you're surrounded by. And then if we go a layer out, maybe that is where right now classmates might lie, but in the future, maybe that's where coworkers might be or different acquaintances that you have. And as we go out another dimension, it's like, okay, there are the couple people that I see at the yoga studio who I don't really know that well, but I know their names, and honestly, having 2-minute conversations with them really brings joy to my life. And being able to let all of these different layers of that bullseye be meaningful and supportive and helpful, and also fluid. So nobody, just because they once maybe were at your bullseye, it doesn't mean that it's wrong or bad for them to start phasing out into some of those outer layers, because people are just going to grow very, very differently. And I think because school traditionally ends in our 20s per se, we think that we should know so much of who we are. And the reality is that we're always growing and changing. And so it's okay for people to grow differently, and allowing more space for that and really circling back to what you need in your life to feel connected and supported, and pursuing those kinds of relationships, whatever that might be in a certain moment, can be really, really helpful and transformative.
Yeah, I guess what would your advice be for someone like losing one of the, you know, inner bullet type of friends, like how to navigate that if maybe it wasn't a super easeful transition away kind of in that process?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think coming back full circle to kind of what we started talking about in the beginning of our podcast, losing friends is grief, right? So you may, if you can anticipate losing anything in life, transitioning, moving, any type of change can bring up a lot of traditional feelings that are very, very similar to the grief process, because we're grieving what once was in some capacity. And so with a friendship and losing one of those core units, or recognizing that that relationship is evolving or changing, or just not having a good ending, which certainly happens, allowing space for all of those emotions to come up, whether it's anger, whether it's frustration, whether it's sadness, fear, anxiety, it's all okay. And so making space for that and finding different ways to process through that, whether it's mentally or journaling or moving your body to release some of that energy. And then I think also simultaneously pursuing other relationships that maybe do meet your needs right now. So it doesn't feel like you're left empty in a sense.
Yeah. With like an open hole type of thing. Yeah, I think that's just such a tough process. And I wanted to talk about it too, because I think we talk so much about relationship breakups, but friend breakups can be just as hard, considering, you know, some of your friends you've been friends with for, you know, like 10 years, and that's longer than a lot of people are in relationships when they break up. And of course it's different, but it's still, and to friendship too, sometimes friendships that end feel more permanent than relationships, depending on the, like a marriage or something that's very different, but depending on the relationship, it felt like it was going to be a permanent part of your life. So I think it's really tough to navigate that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, as you mentioned, with the conversation around relationships breaking up being so loud, we need to make some space for what it feels like to lose a really close friend, or what it feels like to have something go south with someone who you thought was a really close friend, because it can certainly flip you upside down and put you on your head, especially if it wasn't anticipated or expected. So I think, again, just knowing that that's normal for you to feel so impacted by those experiences, and being able to create space for that and allow yourself to grieve that loss, even if it's an idea of what that friendship was going to look like in the future too, because that can be really hard to have to restructure that in our minds if there's a sudden shift around or an abrupt end to a friendship.
Yeah, and I think it's different and hard in adulthood too, because you're living kind of all over the country, all over the world, and it's like, wow, I may never see this person again. Like, that is such a crazy thought when you kind of anticipated your life with a person. Breakups too, and losing people and death and everything too. It's just such a hard thing to grapple with, I think.
There are so few things in life that are permanent. And so when we experience something that either is permanent or feels permanent, it can throw us for a loop, that's for sure, because we just don't like it. We're not used to it. Most things we can recover from.
Yeah. In my experience with this, it has been like, it is always helpful and hard, and just kind of brings it full circle just to focus on the impermanence of everything in life. And yeah, that is hard, but when you can just kind of continually keep coming back to that realization, it at least like gives some perspective or some light into everything. And it's kind of like those bitter sweet moments of life where you honor what happened and what was amazing about it, and then you just honor that it was an impermanent thing and kind of just have to navigate forward and keep moving forward from it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on that idea of impermanence, something I talk about a lot with my clients is also how you feel right now and what you're experiencing right now is likely impermanent. So if you think back to a time where life felt really, really hard or really, really daunting, or if you're in that space right now, can you remember a time where life felt really free and fun and fulfilling? To just kind of say that even when it feels like everything is awful, it usually doesn't stay that way forever. And so circling back to that idea of impermanence, can be really, really helpful as we're grieving or as things are changing and transforming.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And something too that I've kind of recognized with that is when you actually go into how bad the emotion feels at that moment, and you're really, when you're in that place where you're like, this is horrible, this is so horrible to feel this, that's like usually right when it kind of starts to shift. It's like allowing yourself to go the depths of, this feels so horrible and I don't know if I'm going to get through it. And then it kind of shifts after that moment sometimes. And I think it is good perspective too, to realize that things will change. And I think it just, with life experience, you realize that you can get it through anything, but it takes time and it takes going through kind of multiple challenging situations to have that resilience in yourself.
Yep, absolutely. I think it's such a, it's a learning experience, and it sucks, honestly. So a lot of the times it does suck. And so learning how to sit with the suck and look at it and acknowledge what's happening. As you mentioned, it sounds like what you've experienced somewhat is the release that can come from letting those emotions be there and be okay, even if they don't necessarily feel good in a moment.
Yeah, and for me, after graduating and everything, I felt like a lot of peace and the permission to feel emotions, and somehow like connecting to the beauty of the difficult emotions. And I think that now, to this day, helps me process them more. You know, getting creative, writing, drawing, listening to sad music, and realizing like, wow, this is really horrible. But kind of coming back to grief, it's because I loved this person so much, and that's why I feel that. And wow, love is so powerful. And I think that perspective makes it a little bit easier to navigate.
Yeah, what a beautiful practice. I love that.
Yeah. So just to end up with everything, what would be, I guess, your top three tips for someone that has graduated college, that is in this kind of funky place? Like, where would you start to kind of direct your attention to start to kind of ask those big questions and start creating the life that feels aligned?
Yeah, love it. Okay, so my top three tips probably would be, number one, to have a learner's mindset as often as you can. So to be okay with experimentation and not knowing that you're not going to have all the answers right away, but starting to, rather than letting that be a deterrent, letting that be an open door for you to ask questions and to be curious and to start exploring things. So that would be tip number one. Tip number two, I would say, is start to cultivate some self-awareness. Get to know yourself. What do you like? What do you not like? What does your inner noise sound like? What stories are you telling yourself? What's helpful about it? What's not helpful about it? And get really clear on that so you can start to understand how your body and your mind communicates with you, regardless of what's going on externally. And then I think my third tip would be to develop some self-compassion. Because as we know, we tend to lean towards the self-critical, and we tend to push ourselves really, really hard and be incredibly mean to ourselves and perfectionistic. And so it can feel a little bit fluffy at first to think about self-compassion or self-kindness and if it really helps or if that really makes a difference. And there is so much in the literature and research that shows incredible results from what happens when we start to be kinder to ourselves and have compassion for the reality of being human. So those would be my three biggest takeaways.
Definitely. And I'm like already thinking that I'm going to have you back on, because I'm like, we have to also talk about anxiety, because I think that is such a big issue for people. But I think just going back to that, I think the three tips that you said even can serve as places to work through the anxiety. Because I think something, even from like a neuroscience perspective, just knowing that our mind is kind of telling our body stories that make it respond in a certain way, like that, just that awareness can be so helpful.
Oh, yes. That is a huge light bulb moment for so many people and so many clients. And hopefully, as we continue to learn more, the conversation will change where we'll start understanding that at a much younger age so that we get the tools and skills that we need to be able to work with that rather than feel almost powerless to it or just be completely unaware of what's happening.
Yeah. This is just inspiring me in the moment to try and do a neuroscience-based anxiety podcast so we can our brain is just making up stuff, and we can use breath work and other tools to get through stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
So just to end off, where can people find you? And I will put all of this in the show notes too. And I know you have a lot of good programs and free resources and different things to offer people.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you want to follow along, you can find me on Instagram at Chelsea Connors with an underscore at the end. And then if you want to check me out on my website, it's just chelseaconnors.com. I have a lot of free resources. My most current freebie is around different ways to manage stress and sleep hygiene, which is another topic that I talk a lot about. So yeah, I would love to connect. Check it out.
Yeah, definitely. Lots of good stuff on there. And Chelsea does kind of daily just check-ins that are super fun for me if you're a weird self-development junkie like myself. Well, thank you so much, Chelsea.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks.